Morning. Today's Daf Menachos Daf Zayin. We are starting to involve in Beis. We're starting with the words Amarav. Amarav is found about 10 lines from the top of the Amud, and a discussion that begins with a statement of Rav. To remind each other, we learned yesterday in the Mishnah the first stage of the Kamitza, which is Kamitza. I know that sounds simple, but it's true. The Mishnah told us yesterday in yesterday's Mishnah that when it comes to the Minchas Chotein, when it comes to all Menachos, and yesterday we explained why the unusual language of the Mishnah, that if the Kemitza was done by somebody who is ineligible, so the Kemitza is no good. Who is ineligible? So the Mishnah gives us a long list of people who are ineligible. A non-Kohen, a Nonin, a Tevil Yom, a Chusim Begadim, a Chusim Kippurim. You could take a look yesterday. You can go back to yesterday's shiur and go through. We're going to go through in detail all the various examples that are given over in the Mishnah and the better definition of all these examples. Anyway, the Mishnah goes on to record that if the kmitza is done by any of these people who are ineligible, so therefore the kmitza is simply no good. Including that, says the Mishnah, is kamatz b'smol. If the kmitza is done with your left hand, that's also no good. Is it no good indefinitely, or is it? Can you just simply take the kmitza and put it right back? So that was the machlokus in the Mishnah. Ben Beser was of the opinion, yachzir v'yachzor v'yikmotz b'yamin. Ben Beser was of the opinion that the kmitza that's done by somebody who's ineligible, so just simply put it back. Now, I admitted yesterday that one of the cases that we discussed in the Mishnah is somebody who's tamei. And that part, admittedly, that part's hard to understand. Admittedly, in other words, if he's tamei, so presumably once he does the kmitza with that little komitz that's in his hand, the fistful of flour in his hand is tamei, unless you want to say that saying a mokshala kabel tama. I'll tell you what, I'm right now. I'm happier saying I don't understand it. it's just easy. It's not the best, but that one's hard. But other than that, all the other cases are perfectly understandable. Meaning, if you do it with your left hand, so okay, fine, you did it wrong. So you're going to take it, you're going to put it back, and according to Ben Becerra, and then somebody else will just simply go ahead. Somebody, now when I say somebody, I mean a proper Kohen will then do the kmitza properly, and presumably the Tanakhama disagrees with Ben Becerra. Meaning Ben Becerra yachzir v'yachzir v'yikmotz b'yamin is the position only taken by Ben Becerra, and the understanding is that the Tana disagrees, and the Tana just simply say no. In other words, once kmitza is done by somebody who's ineligible, the mincha becomes pasul. And by the way, that's a simple reading of the Mishnah. Meaning you go back to the Tana Kama. The Tana Kama says in all these cases, pasul. And Ben Becerra's position is no, it's not pasul. It's just right now it's not good. Simply put it back and then have somebody else have somebody who's eligible do the kmitza correctly. That's what we learned yesterday in the Mishnah. On that, Amar Rav. So let's go right into the Gemara. Vav Amud Beis. It's about 10 lines from the top. It's the first words in the line. Amar Rav Zarsha Kamitz Yachzer. So Rav says if you have a non-Kohen who does a Kemitza, so Yachzer. Okay, so in other words, obviously he's not a person that could do the Kemitza. He's not a Kohen. So what he'll do is he'll just simply put the Kemitza back into the Mincha Bowl, and now we'll have a Kohen doing it. So to which the Gemara says, wait one second. What is Rav talking about? V'ha anan pasul tanan. The Mishnah says that if a non-Kohen did the kmitza, the mincha is disqualified. You can't put it back. So the Gemara says, my pasul achiyachzir. So the Gemara tries to read the Mishnah. Well, when the Mishnah says disqualified, it means temporarily disqualified until you put it back, which admittedly is a difficult read of the Mishnah, meaning pasul usually means DQ, like no good. So li'achi hainu ben b'seira. Now the Gemara says, now wait one second. If that's really how you want to read the Mishnah, so then there's no difference between the Tanakhama and Ben Becerra. That's exactly what Ben Becerra said. So, Ida Isala Kamitz Be'inei Lo Pligi, Rabban Allah de Ben Becerra. The Gemara says, well, look, if the Kemitza is still there, meaning let's say I have a non-Kohen who did the Kemitza, but the Kemitza is still in his hand, everyone would agree. This is what the Gemara is alleging right now. Everybody would agree that you'll take the Kemitza and you just simply put it back and there's no debate. There is a debate between Tanakhama and Ben Becerra, but only in the following circumstance. Ki Pligi de Chaser Kamitz. We're talking about a case where the Tzar did the Kemitza, and now where did the Kemitza go? We don't know. It's gone. Whatever. It's not here. So Rabbanan Savri lo yavi mitoch beis ovi yemalenu. So the Chachamim are of the opinion that under such circumstances, you can't just simply replace it. It's irreplaceable. And Ben Becerra Savri yavi mitoch beis ovi yemalenu. And Ben Becerra is of the opinion that no, you just simply replace it with new flour from your house. See, hachi Ben Becerra omer yachzir v'yachzor v'yikmos b'yamin. So the Gemara says, okay, if that's really what Ben Becerra meant, Look at the wording of Ben Becerra. It doesn't read in the wording very well. Ben Becerra says, Yachzir, return it, the Yachzir, the Yikmoch, be amin, and then you go ahead and do the Kemitza once again with the right. So Ben Becerra Omer, Yachzir, the Yavir, Misoch, Beso, the Yamalanu, the Yachzir, the Yikmoch, be amin, mi baile. Ben Becerra should have been much more clear about it, that if the flour is gone, it's replaceable. Meaning, this represents the bigger Chiddush. The idea that if I lose the Kemitza flour, I can just simply replace it with new flour, that would be the biggest Chiddush. And if Ben Becerra is really taking that position, he should have clearly articulated that in the Mishnah. He did not. It doesn't seem like that's what he's saying. So, Kika Amarav leBen Becerra. Okay, so the Gemara says, okay, we're going to scratch everything we just said. And when Rav says that, if a non-Kohen were to take out the Kemitza, he just simply returns it, Rav was only telling us this is Ben Becerra's position. So the Gemara says now, and by the way, I'm not sure right now if the Gemara is saying that he's passing like Ben Becerra, which would be unusual because the Ben Becerra is a Das Yachid, is a Shitas Yachid. He's just simply saying that this is what Ben Becerra would say. To which the Gemara says, Pshita. Well, that's obvious, meaning we read the Mishnah together, right? So the Gemara says, yeah, even after you read the Mishnah, and this goes back to a point you made yesterday, so Ma'od Detema Adkan Lo Kamachshir Ben Becerra Le Bismol, Aval Bishar Psulon Lo Kamash Malan. If you carefully read the Mishnah, going back to yesterday's daf, so you'll see that maybe you can argue that Ben Becerra was only arguing on the case where the Kemitza was done with your left hand. Meaning it was a Kohen, he was qualified, everything, every box checked, except that instead of doing it with the right, he did it with the left. Maybe that case, and only in that case, is Ben Becerra saying that it's replaceable. You could just simply take the Kemitza and put it back. Now, why would the left hand be any worse psul, or I should say, a better psul than any of the other psuls recorded in the Mishnah? That's the Gemara's next point. Aval b'shar psul, no, kamash malam. Maishna small. So the Gemara says, well, why is left-handedness something which is a better psul, a lighter psul than all the others? So the Gemara says, and this is an argument that we've seen already numerous times throughout Zvachim, so the Gemara says, because we know on Yom Kippur, part of the Avodah demands that the Kohen use his left hand. When the Kohen Gadol is going into the Kodesh Kedoshim on Yom Kippur, so he's going to be holding both the Ketores and also the pan of ashes. So the pan of coal. Burning hot coal. And so in order for him to do that, he obviously is going to be having to use both of his hands. So on Yom Kippur, there is a demand that a left hand be used. So yes, it's true, in general, for the Avodah, you have to use your right hand, you can't use your left hand. But since at least we see that on one occasion, Avodah is using your left, so we see that the psul of your left hand, obviously, is a reduced psul. So the Gemara says, so the Gemara says, okay, but I'll tell you what. You talk about a non-Kohen doing the Avodah. I can give you examples where a non-Kohen could do the Avodah. Let's take Shechita, for example. Shechita could be done by a non-Kohen. To which the Gemara says now, and this is the second time in our Masechta we're treated to this, Shechita lav Avodah. So the Gemara says, yeah, but we know the Shechita does not qualify as an Avodah. Now, why is Shechita not qualified as Avodah? So we just did this. This was Tosos back on Hayamad Aleph. Tosos on Hayamad Aleph quotes Rashi. Rashi, by the way, is right over here. So Shechita is not an Avodah, says Rashi, because it can be done by a non-Kohen. Why can a non-Kohen do Shechita? Because it's not an Avodah. Why is it not an Avodah? Because it can be done by a non-Kohen. And you see how Rashi like loops himself into a circular reasoning of each halacha explaining the other halacha? Okay, we already made this point. Anyway, Tosos, if you look on Hayamad Aleph, Tosos gives two other explanations in terms of why it is that Shechita is not an Avodah. Okay, but all we need to know right now is that Shechita is not an Avodah, so you can't use that as an example. Below, the Gemara says, V'ham Rabbi Zera, Amar Rav Shechita's Parah Bizar, Psula. What about the Parah Duma? We know that if a non-Kohen were to check the Parah Duma, so it's disqualified. So you're telling me that Shechita is not an Avodah, what about the Parah Duma? The Gemara says, V'ham Rav Allah, El Azar V'chuka K'sivba. And the reason why it's disqualified is because in the instructions in the Torah, regarding Parah Aduma, meaning Parshas Chukas, beginning of Parshas Chukas. So there, the Torah uses the words Elazar. The Torah uses the words Chuka. Elazar is a Kohen. Chuka means that it has to be done with a Kohen. And so therefore, you see that it is an Avodah. So the Gemara says, Shari Parah Dekacha Bedekabaisi. The Gemara says, don't bring in Parah Aduma as a case study. Because Parah Aduma is not an Avodah. In fact, it's not even a carbon. Now, again, I know I've said this many times, but it bears repeating. Parah Aduma, even though you have a Kohen, you have a Shechting, even though the sprinkling of the blood of the Parah Aduma, it's not an avoda. It's not done in the Beis HaMikdash, it's done outside the Beis HaMikdash. It's what the Gemara here describes as Kachay Bedekabayis. Meaning it's not even, it doesn't have Kedusha Zaguf. V'lav kol dekein hu, so the Gemara says, well, can't you make an argument? Kachay Bedekabayis bal kahuna, Kachay Mizbech lo bai kahuna. Well, if Kachay Bedekabayis requires a Kohen, so Kachay Mizbeach, meaning a carbon, for sure should require a Kohen. So the Gemara says, Amar Shisha Bered Rav Idi Midid Dehave Amras Nenegan. The Gemara says, no. Look, Parah Aduma has to be done by a Kohen. I'll give you another example of what has to be done by a Kohen. Tzaras. A person has Tzaras, so who does he show it to? So he's got to show it to his local Kohen. And the Lav Avoda Ninhu, we can all agree. Looking at Tzaras is not considered an Avoda. It's not temple service. We're all in agreement. And meanwhile, you have to go to a Kohen in order to see it. Ubay Kahuna. So the Gemara says, so what do you see over here? Sometimes the Torah just demands a Kohen because the Torah demands a Kohen. Not because it's an Avoda, just simply because that's what the Torah demands. So we could say that by Tzaras, and we could also say that by Parah Aduma. By Parah Aduma, the Torah simply demands that a Kohen be doing it. That's all. Not because it's an Avoda, not because it's a carbon. So the Gemara... Yeah, that's
so
all.
Why is the Gemara asking?
No, this Rashi is just explaining the Gemara. That's exactly the Gemara's point. So the Gemara says, okay, so in other words, it's just, there's a requirement of a Kohen, but that's not a reflection of the fact that's an Avoda. Fine. So the Gemara says, V'nelef mi bama. So the Gemara says, okay, but I'll tell you what, a non-Kohen doing Avoda, it's not unprecedented. We have it, right? Bama. Meaning, remember those historical times, we just finished Zvachim, we just did the last parak of Zvachim, the 14th parak of Zvachim, taught us all the halachas of there were occasions historically where you and I could do the avoda. We'll go to our backyard, we'll offer carbon in our backyard. 14 years of Gilgal, 57 years of Novan Givon. So we were allowed to offer carbon, saying we didn't need a Kohen. We could have done it ourselves. V'chitem b'bama lo yafin, and the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. Okay, there were historical periods where they were allowed, but that's going to create a halachic precedent? So the Gemara says, V'atanya, the Gemara says, Sure it will. At least we think it does. V'hatanya minayin liyotze shim ala lo yered. Look, let's say I have a carbon that underwent the disqualification of yotze, where the meat of the carbon was taken out of the azara, right? Let's say it's a chatas, or it's an asham, or an ola. So the meat is taken out of the azara. So that is what is known as the psul of yotze. Okay, should it go on the mizbeach? The answer is no. What if it goes on the mizbeach? Don't take it down. Leave it up there. The mizbeach is mekadesh. Why? Sharei yotze kasher bebama. Because when offering a carbon in our backyards, so was there a psul of yotze? The answer is no. There was no psul of yotze. Now, it's a funny halacha. You know why there's no psul of yotze? Because it's not circumscribed by anything. Meaning, the mizbeach in our backyard doesn't have any curtains around it, doesn't have a wall. Yeah, you probably have a fence in your backyard, but that's halachically, that's insignificant. So, but still, the idea is that there's no psul of yotze in Obama, and therefore, when a carbon that underwent the disqualification of Yotzeb goes onto the Mizbeach, because it was acceptable by Obama, so therefore it can go up, it can remain, not can go up, it can remain on the top of the Mizbeach. What did we just saw together? That the halachas of Obama do actually weigh in terms of qualifying or disqualifying a carbon in the Beis HaMikdash. To which the Gemara says, Tana azos toros ha'ola samechlei. The Gemara says, no, the Bama argument is an argument, but that wasn't really the source of the halacha. The source of the halacha comes from a drasha. Zos taras ha'ola. Okay, how the drasha works, I don't remember. Sorry for full disclosure. Okay, but Rashi quotes the Gemara Nida, but okay, anyway. The point is that it's really based on a drasha. It's not based on what happened regarding a Bama. And we're not creating any kind of halachic precedent from the Bamas. So the Gemara says, yes, it's true that we use the Bama argument for the psul of Yotze, but that's not the source of the halacha. It's just kind of like a helpful reminder of the halacha that this is in fact so. But the real source of the halacha comes from psukim and comes from drushas. So the Gemara says, okay, so now we have just established that whatever happened by Obama has no halachic precedent. So it has no halachic precedent, so fine. So elatayim dashmina rav halav hachi avamina bishar psulim pasul ben besera. So now we go back to the point that started our whole discussion. Meaning Rav said that if a non-Kohen were to do the kemitza, so according to ben besera you return it. And we asked the question, Rav, what have you just introduced to us? What have you added to our entire discussion? seemingly nothing, seemingly. Because you read the Mishnah, that's exactly what the Mishnah said. To which the Gemara says, no, because here's what I would have thought. If I didn't have Rav and all I had was just the Mishnah, I would have thought that Ben Becerra was only making his point by left-handedness. The psul of small, but not in the not any of the other psuls of the Mishnah. And why? So the argument that we made earlier, because you see that small is acceptable on Yom Kippur, not just acceptable, required on Yom Kippur. So you see the disqualification of using your left hand is a disqualification with a lowercase dq. In other words, but it's not a full disqualification. And that's why I would have thought that Ben Becerra's position of returning the kmitza back into the bowl is only when done with the left, but not any other of the psuls mentioned in the Mishnah. And there's Rav. Rav's there to teach us that Ben Becerra is arguing on all the cases in the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, now, you're telling me that without Rav, I really would have thought that? V'hatanya, the Gemara says, but why don't we consider the following braisa? Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Amar, Machshir, Hayah, Ben Becerra, Mik, Bechol, Apsul, and Kulan. The braisa says, this is a braisa, right, existed before Rav. The braisa said that Ben Becerra's position, where you could just simply take the kmitza and return it back into the bowl, or in all the cases of the psulim of the Mishnah. So we have a braisa. So once again, our question now is, why do I need Rav when the braisa says it? Vitanya, and on top of that, we learned on a braisa. Vikamatz misham, mimakam sharagli hazar, omdos. You could do kmitza even where the non-kohanim stand. When you go into the azara, the first, I'm sorry, you're starting from the east and you're headed west. Those first 11 amas from the Nicanor gate into the Azara, so that's called Ezras Yisrael. But the truth of the matter is, it's not another section of the Azara. It's part and parcel of the Azara. It's just that Yisraelim are allowed entrance into the Azara, but only up to those 11 amas. Beyond that, the Yisraelim do not go further. The point the Brice is making over here is just really simple. It's that the Kohanim can do the Kemitza of a Mincha anywhere in the Azara, even those first 11 amas. Ben Becerra Omer Minayin She'im Kamatz B'Smol She'yachzer V'yachzor V'yikmotz B'yamin Tamal Omer V'kamatz Misham M'makam She'kamatz Kvar. Now Ben Becerra says that if kmitza was done with your left hand, you simply return it back into the mincha and do it with your right hand. And he marshals the pasuk to teach us this point. Now the pasuk over here was not talking about doing it with your left hand. The pasuk just simply said misham, from there. So mali small mali shar psulim. Shouldn't make a difference whether it was done with your left hand or whether it was done with any of the other disqualifications that were mentioned in our Mishnah. So the Gemara once again now focuses all of its attention on Rav. Rav, what did you bring to the table? What did you add to this entire discussion? I mean, this takes us all the way back to the beginning of our entire sugya that we started. Rav says that if a Zar were to do the kmitza, according to Ben Becerra, he can simply return it back into the bowl. Without Rav, we would have known this. We would have read the Mishnah. We have a couple of braisas also that support this as well. We knew that Ben Becerra already argued on all the previous cases, all the disqualifications of the Mishnah. Ela kamash malan Rav, kamash vafilu kidesh. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you what Rav is introducing over here. It's a chiddush. And it goes like this. Now, again, this is something which I did not clarify from day one, but that's fine. It's day seven today. Well, actually, it's day six, but okay, we don't have to get super technical. Okay, so it's the sixth day of Menachos, but I didn't make this point very clear. Let's take a step back and let's just take a look at the kmitza procedure. What the Kohen's going to do is, first, the mincha is going to be placed into its first kli sharis. And the flour and the oil, and it's mixed together. And again, that is going to be depending on what kind of mincha it is. We'll talk about that later in the Masechta. Now, in terms of the kmitza process, what the Kohen now is going to do is he's going to take his hand into the bowl, and he's going to take a fistful of flour. And that now, obviously, is the kometz. But when he takes a fistful of flour, that's not yet the kmitza procedure. It's not finished yet. He then has to then put it into a second kli sharis. And that is what's called also kiddush. In other words, by putting into the second kli sharis, he is now sanctifying it. He's giving it now the kedusha of kmitza, so that now this kometz is eligible to be put onto the mizbeach. What the Kohen cannot do is he can't just simply take the kmitza from the first bowl and simply run up to the mizbeach and burn it on the top of the mizbeach. What first has to happen is that it has to go into a second bowl. And this is what's called the kiddush ha-kometz, the sanctification of the kmitza. Okay. If you want to think about it, by the way, just another way to think about it, perfect. If it, is that it's really, once you take the parallelism between the kmitza and the mincha and the karban, so think of, consider it when we talk about shechting a karban. You shecht a karban, so you can't just simply take the blood from the neck of the animal and throw it onto the mizbeach. You need kabbalas adam. You need to receive it in a bowl. So that means to say that the kohen is there holding the bowl right next to the neck of the animal, so that immediately after shechita, the blood's going to run into the bowl. And you need that. That's a requirement. So the same thing is true regarding the kmitza, meaning the kmitza can't just simply be taken and put onto the mizbech. It first has to be received into a second kli shareis. Then and only then is it going onto the top of the mizbech and being burned on the top of the mizbech. Good. Here's now what Rav is introducing in terms of a chiddush. Chiddush goes like this. Let's say it was done with their left hand, or let's say it was done by a non-kohen. It doesn't matter what the psul is. Let's say the kmitza was done by a psul. And not only did he do the kmitza, he even put it into a second bowl. Oh, so now here's what I would have said. Look, if he just took out the kmitza, oops, just put it back. But taking out the kmitza, putting it into a second bowl, now is a chiddush. Now I would have thought that because the kumitz went into the second bowl, now it's invested with the kedusha of kmitza. But since it was done by apostle, now this is not a recoverable situation. It's an unrecoverable situation. That is the chiddush of Rav. So Ella Hakamash Malan. I'm just rereading that last line that we read. Rav kumitz vafilu kidesh. Even if he's mekadesh the kumitz, ula fuka mehani tanai. And the Gemara says, and this. If this is what Rav's intent was, not everyone's in agreement with this point. The Tanya with Anton Abrais, Rabbi Yossi ben Yosin. Okay, that's an interesting name. Okay, the Rabbi Yehuda Hanachtom, Rabbi Yehuda the baker. Amru b'medvar marmar shekametz v'lo kiddush. When is this true that you could just take the kametz and put it back into the kli? That's only if you were not mekadesh the kametz. Avakidish, but once you're mekadesh the kumitz, puzzle, then it becomes disqualified. Igadarmina, we're going to have another version of basically the same point. Kumitz in, kidesh lo. Only if the kumitz was done, but not if the kumitz was done and kidesh hakumitz as well. And now, in the second version, so obviously now it's not that the brisa is going to be a point of disagreement, now the brisa serves as a point of agreement. Keman kani tonight goes like these brisa, like these tonight. Lafuki mitanakama, and obviously the tanakama of that brisa is not going to agree. Okay, maskev la Rav Nachman, my kasavri hani tonight. So the Gemara says I need to wrap my heads around this idea that if the kmitza was done, but it wasn't put into a second bowl, so then you could just simply put it back into the first bowl. Oh, but once you put it into a second bowl, so then game over. The Gemara says, I have to understand that better. Look, if the kmitza is done by a non-kohen is disqualified. Oh, and by the way, there's a point that I was not super clear about. Meaning, in this latest presentation of Rav, right? This is a really important point. In this latest presentation of Rav, so what Rav is saying is I take back my point of clarification. Okay, so e kmitzas a psulam avodahi. So the Gemara says if the kmitza that's done by a disqualified person is in fact considered an avoda, so the Gemara says hafagav de lo avile matan kli. So then even if I wasn't mekadesh of the kmitz, meaning if disqualified, it just by doing the act of kmitza by itself, in other words, if we call that an avoda, so then game over. I can't put it back. And he kmitza psulam lav avodahi ki avile matan kli my have. So, and if the kmitza of apostle is not considered avoda, so I put it into a second kli. So what? So the Gemara says, "Hadamar of Nachman olam avodihi velo gamra avodasa ad avile matan kli." So the Gemara says like this: that no, you know what? The correct way to view it is like this: doing the kmitza is just part of the avoda. Meaning, the act of kmitza by itself is not just simply taking a fistful of flour out of the first kli. The complete act of kmitza is take the fistful of flour of the first kli and place it into the second kli. That is now a complete act of kmitza. And now here's exactly the point, meaning this is how Ben Becerra is understanding it. if I didn't finish the procedure, if I only went through the first part of the procedure but didn't complete the entire procedure, so then I could simply take it and put it back into the first kli because we haven't done kmitza yet. Kmitza in its entirety. However, if I do the kmitza, where if a non-kohen or any of the other disqualified people in the Mishnah were to take out the kmitza and put it into a kli sharis, now that entire act is done by a pasul individual or a pasul kohen. Under those circumstances, now that the kmitza is done in its entirety by a pasul, so under those circumstances, it's going to be pasul.
If you compare it to shechita, so you and kavana, you use shechita, what comes out, but it doesn't go into a second kali. So what happens? It's pasul, no? So it should be the same. It has to go to make it to the. If you are comparing. She has to make it to the Kelly.
Come to me after. I'll try to describe it better after the daf. Okay. And to which now the Gemara asks the following question. So, Ihachi, we're now the very bottom of Vavam Nibbez, Ihachi, Afilo Kidesh, Vichimahadol, the Kamats, the Duch, the Tiktash, the Lipsol. So the Gemara says, so now I am going to ask you the following question. Okay. So you're now describing for me that, according to Ben Becerra, a apostle person or apostle Kohen did the kmitza, but only just removed the fistful of flour, and he didn't put into a second kli. Okay, let's keep it nice and simple. Let's say it's a non-Kohen. So the non-Kohen didn't put into a second kli, and according to Ben Becerra, okay, but that's fine. In other words, you'll just simply put it back into the first kli. Consider now what's happening. We are now having a non-Kohen taking the kmitza and putting it into a kli sharis. Now, granted, by the way, not the second kli sharis. In other words, but even going back to the first kli sharis, the initial kli sharis, still, when all is said and done, it's a non-kohen now putting the kmitza into the kli sharis. Shouldn't that disqualify it? Meaning, okay, it didn't go into the second kli sharis, and okay, he's returning it back to the first. But he's returning it back to the first. And that's something that can only be done by a qualified kohen. So why isn't that considered an act that disqualifies the mincha? It's a really sharp question. It's a strong question. To which the Gemara is going to give two answers. So we're on the very top of Zion Amid Aleph, second line down. So the Gemara is going to give two answers to this. A technical answer and a fundamental answer. Let me flip that around. A fundamental answer and a technical answer. Let's start with Even the technical answer has some fundamental rules to it. But first, we deal with the fundamental answer. Amar Rav Yochanan Zosamaris Kli Sharis Emikachin Elamidas. Fundamentally, you know how Kli Sharis works. It's not just simply the act of putting the flour into a bowl. You need das. You need intent. Without the intent, this is not a halachically regarded act. No status is obtained to the mincha if it's just put into a kli, but no one had any intent. When the non-Kohen took out the kometz, he shouldn't have done that. And then someone points out and says, wait one second, you're not a Kohen. What are you doing? And if you ask Ben Becerra says, okay, just put it back into the first. It's a non-Kohen, and he's putting it into a kli sharis. There's no das, meaning he has no intent to imbue it with any kind of status. He's just not trying to undo that which he did. And therefore, when it's done without das, it doesn't invest it with any kind of kedusha.
Maybe his das doesn't even count.
I hear what you're saying. I think you're saying even a bigger chiddush, but okay, it could be. So the Gemara says Hamidas Mikachin. The Gemara says, now wait one second. You're telling me that if a non-Kohen had das, that it's going to invest it with kedusha v'habayim in Eresh Lakish Rav Yochanan. In fact, this question was asked to Rav Yochanan, the same person who's giving this answer, and he says Klishar is Ma'ashek she kachu psulim lechatchila likarev. So. Can someone disqualified invest it with Kedusha? The Amrle ain't Mekachin. And he says, of course not. So, and even if there's Das, so Amrle ain't Mekachin, the Karva of Mekachin li Pasul. So the Gemara says, okay. In other words, if a non-Kohen were to put it into a Kli Sharis, even with Das, it's not going to invest it with Kedusha so that it could be offered on the Mizbeach, but it will make it eligible enough to be disqualified. Meaning, different thresholds. Can a non-Kohen invest it with Kedusha by putting it into a Kli Sharis so that it could be offered? Of course, the answer is no. But in other words, but if he's trying to invest it with Kedusha and he puts it into a Kli Sharis, at least it gives it enough of a Kedusha so that it's disqualified. Fine. That's answer number one. So answer number one is that when he returns it back to the initial bowl, he did it without intent, And that's fine. To which we have now answer number two. Rav Amar Amar Kagon Sheyachziru Labisa Kedusha. So the Gemara says, well, what, and I call this now the technical answer. Although it's technical, but there is a fundamental rule coming out of this. When the non-Kohen takes the chametz and puts it back into the bowl, he doesn't put it into the bowl, he puts it on the side of the bowl, on the lip of the bowl. And let's assume right now that the lip of the bowl is nice and flat. So it can actually sit on the lip of the bowl. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second, really? So hechi kametz, so the labisa kedusha, umekametz hechi kametz. So the Gemara says, okay, but wait 1 second, it's not, you need to return it back into the interior of the bowl. So the Gemara says, well, he put it on the side of the bowl, interior, but it didn't go into the actual, back into the actual flour, where he took it from. They came into comments, so the Gemara says, so the Gemara says, well, I don't understand. In other words, when he returns it, shouldn't he return it back into the actual flour itself? So the Gemara says, he puts it on the edge of the bowl. So the Gemara says, and here's what you're going to do. So when you return the kamisa, don't put it back into the flour, because by putting it back into the flour, that may represent a problem of a non-Kohen inserting it into the bowl. And again, right now in the second answer, the Gemara is assuming that's going to be an issue. Put it on the side of the bowl. Then what you're going to do is you're going to shake it. And by shaking it now, all that kamisa flour is going to fall back into the rest of the flour. And this is what the Gemara describes as memela. Okay? In other areas of halacha, we have this idea of the distinction between doing something directly versus indirectly. What the Gemara is arguing over here is that if done indirectly, so then this doesn't disqualify. The Gemara over here cites a comparison. It's like it's being done by a monkey. What the Gemara just simply means by that is we don't consider this as a direct action done by a human, in this case a non-qualified Kohen. Every non-Kohen is disqualified. But in other words, it's not considered directly done by the Tzar, and since it's done indirectly, so therefore under those circumstances it would be okay. Okay, yeah. Okay. So where do we stand right now? Our question is, according to Ben Becerra, if a non-Kohen took out the Kamitza, it could return it. Question, even when he returns it, you have now a non-Kohen putting the Kohen into a Kli Sharis. Two answers. One is that you need Das, and there's no Das over here. Two, he doesn't put it directly in, he puts it on the side, and we shake it back in. The Gemara says, you know what, there's a third answer, which is not given. I wonder why this third answer is not given. What is the third answer? How about we put it back into a Kli that's grounded? And what the Gemara now is going to discuss really for a good part of today's daf is the following. Does a Kli need to be in the air in order for the Kli to invest something with Kedusha, or can it be grounded? And here by grounded, I mean literally sitting on the ground. And now, Elish Mamina comes to me Kli Shal Gabe Karka. So the Gemara says, so when you're doing Kemitza, it has to be done on a Kli that's being held up off the ground by a Kohen. Now, by the way, granted, of course, that the Kohen himself is grounded, right? We made a big deal about that back in Zvachim. Kohen's feet have to be on the ground. But in terms of the Kli itself, the Kli has to be being held by the Kohen above the ground. Now, the Gemara says, now, is this correct or is this not correct? Meaning, so what we are discussing is, if investment of a mincha is done on a Kli that's connected to the ground, is that halachically giving it status or no? No status whatsoever, because it is connected, not connected, but sitting on the ground. And Kanaga Bebai Di Bayalan de Rebbe Avi Mitzini Menachos Be Rav Chisa. And the Gemara says, and you know, this was a discussion between Avimi who learned Masechta Menachos by Rav Chisa. Now, in order to understand the next lines of Gemara, all we need to know is one good piece of information, and that is Rav Chisa is a Talmud, and Avimi is a Rebbe. I did? Elishmamina comes in Meklisha Gabe Karka. I could have been clearer about that. So you see over Yishmamina comes in Meklisha Gabe Karka that you can do Kemitza with a Kli that is on the ground by virtue of the fact that he didn't give this answer, so it must be that Kemitza can be done with something that's on the ground. So the Gemara says, Kanaga Bebai Di Bai Lan Rabbi Avimi Kuni Menachos Be Rav Chisa. And the Gemara says, and you know, this was a discussion that was had between Avimi and Rav Chisa. Now, Avimi learnt Menachos by Rav Chisa. And the Gemara is so confused right now because, wait one second. We know that Rav Chisda is the Talmud. We know that Avimi is a Rebbe. What is a Rebbe doing learning Menachos by the Talmud? What's going on over here? And the Gemara is bothered exactly by that question. Vavimi be Rav Chisda tani? What are you telling me that Avimi learned by Rav Chisda? Vaham Rav Chisda kupi tabe balei me Avimi. Rav Chisda acknowledges that he himself got beaten numerous times by Avimi. Okay, back in the good old days, and I know you can quibble on whether they're good or not, but back in the good old days, so in other words, if the Rebbe wasn't happy with the Talmud, so the Talmud heard about it, and he didn't just hear about it. Okay, so he got beaten. So the Rav Chisda acknowledges that there were a number of times I got beaten over one particular halachic point. The Ashmaisa Balahachris Ritzufin Lamed Yom Mushnei V'Chemishay Samach Yume. I don't want to get too taken off tangent with this particular line of Gemara. This is an issue of when you're selling the property of Yisomim, under certain circumstances, you have to sell them. We don't want to sell any property of orphans, meaning orphans inherit property while they're still children. So that property is generally held on, even if there are creditors and even if there are people who are demanding their obligations from the estate. So generally it's not sold, but under certain circumstances they are sold. And a question of procedurally, how exactly is the sale of this property done? One braisa says that a proclamation is done for 30 days, or basically they auction the property off. One braisa says that a proclamation was done for 30 days, another braisa says for 60 days, and we're confused in terms of whether it's 30 or 60, and there was an answer that needed to be given in terms of how to resolve those two different numbers. And one answer was that there's a difference between consecutive days versus announcing on a Monday and Thursday. Again, it's not germane to our particular discussion. It just happens to be that Rav Chisda says that over this particular point, Avimi would hit me numerous times over various other answers that I could have given to this question. Anyway, point over here is Avimi is a Rebbe. Rav Chisda is a Talmud. So how is Avimi learning Menachos by Rav Chisda? It's strange. So the Gemara says, Avimi Masechta Itakri Itakrele. So the Gemara says, well, look, here's what happened. Background to the story. Avimi knew Menachos, and he forgot it.
Rav Yosef also lost it.
So he forgot it. Vaza kamet Rav Chisda lad kure and gamre. And so now he turns to his Talmud. In other words, he knew that his Talmud was proficient in Masechta Menachos. So Avimi went over to his Talmud to learn from his Talmud, Besechta Menachos. Fine. V'lishlech leiv alesa lagabei. So the Gemara says, okay, but still. In other words, let's not confuse the roles. Avimi is the Rebbe. Rav Chisda is the Talmud. Meaning, even though Avimi needed Rav Chisda, but at the same time, Avimi is the Rebbe, so why doesn't he call Rav Chisda into his office and say, okay, nu, I need your help. So the Gemara says, Savra hachim istayim osa tfei. The Gemara says, okay, but he would get more siyata d'shmaya by having him go to his Talmud in order to learn by his Talmud. Rashi over here writes so succinctly and so beautifully, second wide line down in Rashi, Mistayim osa mishum yagati matsasi. So Rashi quotes the Gemara in Megillah. The Gemara in Megillah tells us that when you put in yagia, when you put in the effort, so then you're going to have success. If you don't put in the effort, you're not going to get success. So Avimi understood that he could have, of course, called in Rav Chisda, but then he wouldn't have put in the effort and the exertion. So by him putting in the effort and the exertion, so that's going to create more siyata d'shmaya. It's funny, without the Rashi, by the way, I would have said just like you, meaning that I would have said the pshat in the Gemara is that it would have created more busha, and ein habay shalomed. In other words, if you're not prepared to be embarrassed, so you're not going to learn, meaning part of learning is it's an embarrassing procedure. Okay, anyway, yeah, it's true. Okay, Pagabe Rav Nachman. Okay, so they met with Rav Nachman. Amarle Ketza Komsen. So they asked Rav Nachman, well, how's Kemitza done? It's a funny question, meaning obviously these are Amarayim, well past Chorban Beis HaMikdash. And so, but still, in other words, obviously, I mean, we are now 126 days into Seder Kachim, approximately, right? And so, obviously, they invested a lot of time learning about the Karbanos. You see how much Gemara is discussed over Zvachim and Menachos. So they asked Rav Nachman, could you point out to us how you do Kemitza? Amar le mikli zeh. So Rav Nachman points to a kli that's on the ground and he says, look, you see that kli over there? Okay, again, all this was examples. They obviously didn't do the actual Kemitza. So Amar le vichi comes in mikli shal gabe karka. So the student says to Rav Nachman, well, wait one second, it's on the ground. You can't do Kemitza on a kli that's on the ground. Amrle demagbele kohen. Oh, so Rav Nachman says, oh, you're right. The kohen is going to have to pick it up. Ketzen mikachin es hamanachos. So, and how are you mikadosh the mincha? Now, even though the Gemara over here uses the word mincha, in other words, we're talking here about the komets. So how are you mikadosh the komets? So the Amarle knows the Kliza. So he says, well, you put into another kli. V'chi mikashin b'kli shagabe karka. Wait 1 second, that kli is on the ground as well. So Amarle, demag b'le kohen. So Rav Nachman says, oh, no, you're right. In other words, the kohen's going to have to lift it up. Okay, so Amarle imkein utzrachta gimel kohanim. So the Gemara says, so do you see what we all just learned together? What we learned together is that in order for a kmitzah to be done, by definition, we need three kohanim. Okay? In other words, I need you to hold the initial bowl. I'm going to do the kmitzah. You're going to hold the second bowl. And as Rashi points out over here, why can't we have one kohen doing it with both hands? The answer we should all realize immediately is because this is an avodah, and avodah has to be done with the right hand. So in other words, you need to hold that initial bowl with your right hand. I have to do kmitzah with my right hand, and none of us are kohanim here, so... In other words,
why can't I put the kli down and take another kli with my right hand?
What? Say it again. What are you suggesting?
Why do you need two kohanim? We could have one kohan with initial kli, and after the guy does it, push it down
okay.
And take another with his right hand.
Okay, good. Okay, just to clarify, what Ben's suggesting is that have the initial kohen, have the first kohen hold the initial bowl, have the second kohen do the komets, have the first kohen then pick up the second kli. That's good. It's a good question. Okay. If we're going to do it all in one procedure, so I need three kohanim. So, by the way, I don't have an answer. So we need three kohanim. To which the Gemara says, and does that really bother you? Like, okay, so we need three kohanim. So good. So congratulations. It's Columbus also thought he discovered America. You know, I know I've used that line before, but it's true. It's true. And somehow, by the way, the world is still convinced that he discovered America. It's a funny thing. So anyway, okay, good. So you need three kohanim. Amar levitei tzricha yudgimel ketamid. The Gemara says, look, I got news for you. Right? We're going to learn Masechta Tamid together. Do you know that 13 kohanim are required every morning in order to take the parts of the animal up to the top of the mizbeach? Okay, so I need 13 kohanim. So over here for kmitza, I need three kohanim. Congratulations. That's correct. Okay, good. Why should any of this bother us? Eisvei. And so this conversation now continues. And really, when I say the conversation, I mean the conversation of, does a kli sharis need to be held by a kohen, or can it be on the ground, sitting on the ground? And the Gemara now is going to do is it's going to create a really strong argument, a number of strong arguments, that it does not have to be held by a kohen. It could be sitting on the ground. Eisvei. First, we're going to quote a mishnah that we're going to learn later in the Masechta. Zeh klal kol hakomets menosim b'kli, hamolech v'hamakta lechol davar shedarko lechol v'chulei. Okay, so it's a Mishnah coming up on Daf Yud Beis. Okay, we'll see the Mishnah in less than a week from now, God willing. V'chi v'chule v'ilo magbia lo ketani. Notice, that Mishnah over there doesn't utter a word about lifting up the bowl. So the Gemara says, Tana Seder Avodas Nakiv v'lo Seder Kohanim. So the Gemara says, okay, but that Mishnah is focusing on the Avoda. The Mishnah is not talking about Kohanim. Meaning, if the Mishnah was talking from the perspective of the Kohanim, yes. The Mishnah over there would articulate that I need a kohen to lift the bowl up. But the Mishnah over there was just looking at it procedurally from the avoda perspective. Fine. So that Mishnah is not proof positive in any direction. But the Gemara says, but consider now the following Mishnah. Can I do kemitza from a kli that is on the ground? So he says, well, why don't we take a look at what's done inside. Inside over here means inside the heichal. And now we move all of our attention to the lechem upon him. Okay. Before we start over here, let me make a couple of prefatory remarks. Number one, the lechem upon him is a mincha. Okay? It's not classic in that we don't do kmitza from the lechem upon him. All 12 loaves are going to be eaten by the kohanim on a weekly basis. But in other words, but it's a mincha. Okay. Lechem upon him, we all know, but just a quick, I'm going to do this really quick. Is that on a weekly basis, the bread is baked on Friday, put onto the table on Shabbos. Last week's bread is going to be removed off the table. Exactly how that replacement is done is a debate and a discussion we're going to see later in the Masechta. And then, before the Kohanim can eat any of the Lechem upon him, so I need a matir. What is the matir with the lechem upon him? So again, there's no kamitza that's done with the lechem upon him, but there are two spoonfuls of lavona that sit on the top of the two stacks of lechem upon him in the heichal. Those two spoonfuls of lavona are burnt on the top of the mizbeach. They serve as the matir. Once these lavona are burnt on the top of the mizbeach, so then the lechem upon him can in fact be consumed by the kohanim. Okay. With all that stated, so now here comes the analysis. So, and here now we're quoting a Mishnah. This Mishnah is later in the Masechta, in Menachos. Arba Kohanim nechnasim shnayim b'yadam beis adarim v'shnayim b'yadam shnei bezichin. There are four Kohanim, not total. There are four Kohanim who are going to be going into the Heichal. Two of them are going to be carrying two stacks of bread. I call it bread, by the way. You understand? It's the lechem upon him. And the only point of clarification over here is that it's not chametz. In other words, it's matzah. But it's thick matzah. We'll talk more about that later. Anyway, so two kohanim are going in with the two stacks of the lechem upon him. Each one of them holding six, because there are 12 in total. Two more kohanim, each one of them are going to be holding one of the spoons of the bezichin. The arba makdim lefneim, there are another four kohanim who are going in front of them. Shnayim litol shnei sedarim, beis litol beis bezichin. They're taking last week's bread, obviously. This, in other words, we're replaced. The ilu, as we turn now to the top of Zayin Amud Beis, the ilu magbias ha-shulchan lo ketani. Now over here, this is a mincha. In order for it to work, don't I have to lift the table? Now I don't know how heavy the table is, and I don't know how many kohanim are needed, but it doesn't matter. If the shulchan over here is going to be treated like a kli, which the Gemara is in fact doing that, it's comparing the shulchan to a kli. It's actually not comparing. The shulchan is a kli. So then, if the lifting up of the shulchan is a requirement, what the Mishnah should be describing now are the amount of kohanim necessary in order to lift the table. Now, lav amar hasam seder avodas nakan hachen nami seder avodas nakan. Now the Gemara says, I know what you're going to suggest. You're going to try to suggest, well, the Mishnah over there was not talking about kohanim; it was just talking about procedurally how the avodah is done. But the Gemara says, midami hasam lo nachas l'minyana tekohanim, hachen nachas l'minyana tekohanim. But we just read the Mishnah together. The Mishnah was actually counting out Kohanim. How many Kohanim are necessary? I need four Kohanim to bring in the new Lechem upon him and the new Bezichin. I need four Kohanim to remove last week's Lechem upon him and Bezichin. If now there is a requirement to lift the table, the Mishnah should have clearly articulated, and I need however many Kohanim are necessary to lift the table. So, im isa lisne magbia lo shmamina comes in mikli shaga bekarka shmamina. So the Gemara says, I think what we have now is definitive proof that when kmitza is done from the initial bowl, it does not need to, the kli does not have to be off the ground. It could be on the ground. Seems to be proof positive from the lechem upon him. Amarava pshitoli. So now Rava says, so good. So now let's take assessment in terms of what we have just learned altogether. It is now obvious to me, komitz miklisha agabe karka, that when you do kmitza from the initial kli, so you could do it from a kli that's on the ground, and shekem atzina basilik bezichin, because I saw that we do that regarding the two spoonfuls of lavona. Now remember, by the lechem upon him, there is no kmitza per se. What serves in the place of the komitz when it comes to the lechem upon him are the two spoonfuls of the bezichin. They in the lechem upon him, they represent the kametz. But again, it's grounded. That's exactly the point. So Rava says, so when I do the kametzah from the initial kli, it could be done from a kli that's on the ground. We learned that from the lechem upon him. And mekachim mincha beklisha agabe karka. And even when I put the flour into the original kli, so it could be done while it's grounded. Shekein matzina besira bezichin, because when I put the new spoonfuls of lavona, and again the spoonfuls of lavona here serve as the kametz, so when I put it on the table, so I'm putting it on the table that's obviously grounded. Okay, so when I'm taking the kametzah from the kli, says Rava, it can be grounded. The kli can be grounded, and when I'm putting it into the initial kli, that too can be grounded as well by Rava. But Rava says, here's the only thing left for discussion, which I don't know. Kiddush kometz mai. When I take the kmitza from a standard mincha and I put it into a second kli, can that second kli be grounded or does it have to be held in the air? And over here, the question basically becomes the following. Mi mincha yafin Allah, o mi dam yafin Allah. Do I learn it from mincha or do I learn it from the blood? Meaning, we've just established that with the original mincha, it can be both taken and removed from the initial kli, even while the kli is grounded. So maybe in terms of the kiddush kometz, maybe the same thing should be true. It could be done into a second kli that's grounded. Or on the other hand, maybe not. Maybe we, over here, we look at our parallel. Again, the parallel between menachos and karbanos and zvachim is that the shechita is the kamitza. In other words, it's the taking out part of the original item, and the kiddush hakometz is the kabbalah sadam. If the kiddush hakometz is like the kabbalah sadam, so we know that when it comes to the kabbalah sadam, so the kohen has to be holding the bowl. And so maybe over here for the kiddush hakometz, the kohen has to be holding the second kli for the kiddush hakometz. Ha deparsha midam yafin Allah. And after asking the question, Rava says, we compare it to blood. Just like when a kohen is accepting the blood, kabbalah sadam, of an animal, he has to be holding the kli, so too for the kiddush hakometz, the kohen has to be holding the holding that bowl. So umi amar Rava hachi v'ha itmar kama shechalka b'shnei kelim. So the Gemara says, now wait 1 second, does Rav really entertain this? Meaning, is he really create a parallel? So the Gemara says, why don't we consider the following? Let's say kemitza was done, but instead of the kohen putting the kemitza into one bowl, the kohen then broke up the kometz into two parts and put the two halves into two separate bowls. Rav Nachman amar einu kadosh, Rava amar kadosh. And here we have a debate between Rav Nachman and Rava. Rav Nachman says that the kometz has not received its kedusha. It's not imbued, it's not invested with kedusha, and Rava disagrees. Now, v'im isa leilef midam. So the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. Isn't Rava the same person who just a moment ago said that the kiddush hakometz is comparable to the receiving to the kabbalah sadam? And if that is in fact true, we know with regarding kabbalah sadam, you must receive it in one bowl. And if so, if he's striking a parallel between the two, so then the same thing should be true regarding the kometz. It should be done in one bowl. So hada be Rava me'ahi. So the Gemara says, you're right. If in fact Rava were to learn it, if in fact Rava would have made the comparison, so then you're absolutely right. Rava retracted the comparison. Now the Gemara says, now, as long as we brought up the topic of blood, so let's just establish. How do I know that when it comes to blood, that it has to be received in one bowl, it can't be broken up into two bowls? Ditni Rav Tachlifi ben Shaul. So we learned this based on a brisa that was taught to us by Rav Tachlifa. Now we did this back in Zvachim. We're going to do this again. I'll do this a little bit quickly. Kiddush pachus mechdei hazav bechli zeh, upachus mechdei hazav bechli zeh, lo kiddush. That if when it comes to the para aduma, if let's say I was mekadesh the water in a kli that is not enough to do hazah, and another kli that was not enough to do hazah, so it's not going to work. V'ibayilu b'damai mai. And what is the halacha regarding the blood of a karban? Hilchas ahim hilchas lo yafinan. Is this a halacha specific to para aduma, and therefore it's not transferable to other halachas? O duma hasa mai tamid dechsiv v'tava b'mayim. So hachanam haksiv v'tava b'dam. Or maybe no. Maybe it's based on a drasha. Meaning by the para aduma it says v'tava b'mayim. Meaning I need enough water, and I say water, I mean water that is a solution of water and ashes. I need enough in order to dip, meaning I need enough in order for there to be a shear. So maybe v'tav al-badam, same thing also. In other words, enough blood has to be collected in a bowl for a shear. V'idmar amar zika amar avalazar apadam lo kidesh. And the Gemara's conclusion over here, very clear, that when it comes to blood of a karban, it is not invested with the kedusha unless I collect enough in one bowl. And Amar Rava Tanya Nami Achin Rava, and right, you can highlight over here Rava because this is exactly the point. Rava says we have a brisa supporting this as well. V'taval, in other words, when dipping your finger in the bowl to apply to the mizbeach, we did this back in Zvachim. V'taval v'lo misfig, you must dip your finger in the bowl itself. You can't just simply wipe your finger on the side of the bowl. B'dam shi'e b'dam shi'er tefila mikaro. How much blood has to be in the bowl? Enough so that we have enough application for the entire mizbeach in this one time. And min hadam shebe'inyan. And now that last point over there is not perfectly clear exactly what that means. And tomorrow we'll discuss that last point. But let's just finish up over here. V'itzirich l'michtev v'tava v'itzirich l'michtev v'dam. The first two points are necessary, meaning I wouldn't have learned one from the other. D'ikas v'rechmane v'tava hava minaf agav d'lo kibol shir tvilos. Meaning if the Torah would have just simply said v'tava, it would be even if I don't have right now enough blood in the bowl. So, mi'karu, kas v'rechmane v'dam. So that's why the Torah says b'dam, to tell me that I have to have enough blood in the bowl so that it was enough for a application. And if it just simply said b'dam, I would have suggested that it'd be enough if he just simply wiped his finger on the side of the bowl. That's what the Torah says, v'taval, meaning that he has to dip his finger into the bowl. Point from all this is as follows. You see that when it comes to the blood of a carbon, you must have enough blood in the bowl so that it represents a shear. And so now, if that's true, and if we made a parallel between dam of a karban and the kametz of a mincha, so the same thing would be true regarding the kemitza, that you need enough kometz to go into one bowl and not to be divided into two separate bowls. If all this is true, and Rava creates a parallel, so Rava would then therefore have to conclude that in order for the kometz to work, it has to go into one bowl. By virtue of the fact that we know that Rava says that if I take a kometz and divide it into two bowls, that would be acceptable. Clearly what Rava does not do is he does not draw a parallel between the two. Okay, okay. That takes us to the end, not to the end, but more or less the end of the daf. Tomorrow we start off with the words min adam, the third point that we learned regarding the drushas of the blood. We'll start there tomorrow.